Hey, it's Eli Campbell. In our Common Folk in the Boat series, we highlight the fact that the Yampa Valley attracts some of the best in their respective fields. Well, March 1st through 3rd, 2024, the Yampa Valley is going to be playing host to some of the best bluegrass musicians as well. And we're excited to have an opportunity to chat with a few of them before and while they're in town. This is our Common Folk spinoff, Winter Wondergrass Folk in the Boat. Eli Campbell here with you, excited to continue our Winter Wondergrass Folk in the Boat series here, where we are doing a spinoff of our typical Common Folk in the Boat podcast with Winter Wondergrass musicians who are going to be in town this weekend for Winter Wondergrass in Steamboat. And today we're joined by Sam Grisman, one of the many musicians who will be in town this weekend. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Actually, we're going to be there on Friday as well. We're playing the main stage at 2:40 on Friday. And we're playing a couple of times on Saturday, so we'll be there most of the weekend just hanging. We have Sunday off, so we'll be shredding and hanging and session with the folks.
Which is amazing for the musicians that get to come out here. Not only are you playing music multiple days, but you get to experience Steamboat. So of the festival and of the town, is there anything that in particular that you're looking forward to experience this weekend, either Friday and Saturday when you're playing music or Sunday when you're just getting to hang out?
Man, there's just so much great music on the lineup and so many great friends. Looking forward to doing a little picking with Dominic Leslie and the rest of the folks in Molly Tuttle's band. And I saw Paul Coffin one time and had a great time. I can't wait to see his set. And our good friend Sierra Farrell's playing as well. And so I can't wait to pick with her and the rest of her band. And yeah, it should just be a really great time. Never seen Daniel Donato live, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, the lineup this year is absolutely incredible. Paul Coffin coming back after making an appearance last year that had the whole town and everyone that came to that show buzzing. It should be a lot of fun Saturday night when he is taking the main stage again. Now, for you, you know, there's a lot of musicians that can say that they come from a strong family background in music. There's a lot that say music was a big part of their house when they were young, but not many can make that claim nearly as strong as you. Of course, your dad, David Grisman, and Jerry Garcia made some musical magic in the home that you grew up in. And I know that plays a large role in the music that you play today, but were you able to really appreciate how special that was when you were young as you are able to now?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, it's not a contest. Anybody can grow up in a home with a strong musical background. All you need is just to have that love and to, you know, be exposed to music constantly as a little one. And so I feel like I'm, you know, I was born into a similar circumstance as many of my friends who maybe didn't have parents who were as accomplished in the field of music. But to your point, you know, it is true that some of the most exceptional acoustic music was recorded in the house that I grew up in as I was a small child. And that was just the reality that I was used to. So in a way it was very exceptional because I had this rich life, this musical life at home where certain family friends and colleagues of my dad would come to record. And he would maybe know that, say, the Del McCurry band was coming to hang for a few days in, you know, February. And so in November or December, he would start working on a few bluegrass tunes with me and get me sort of ready to throw me into the fire to learn how to play with these masters. So that would kind of happen time and time again, you know, like with Martin Taylor or Ralph Stanley or, you know, Doc Watson or his, John Hartford, Mike Seeger. I remember I was about 9 years old and my dad and John Hartford and Mike Seeger were making this record called Retrograss in our basement. And he had promised me that I would get to record a tune with those guys or at least play one. And my mom was putting me to bed and I started to throw a tantrum. And she was asking me what was wrong. And I said, my dad said I could play one with the guys, you know? So I went downstairs and sort of made my case and they were recording this tune, Memphis. It's a Chuck Berry tune. It's only got one chord change. And so he goes, I'll tell you what, man, we're recording right now, but if you can figure out what the chord change is, you can come in and we'll let you take the next track with us. You know, you can do the next take with us. And so I basically like sat in there past my bedtime trying to learn the chord change to Memphis. I figured it out. You know, they finished the one take and I went in and stood next to my dad. He didn't set up any microphones for me or anything, but to the record and you can kind of hear the bass. So
that's an amazing story, and it puts it into perspective. You know, I've got kids that throw tantrums when they need to go to bed, but it's nothing for quite as exciting a reason as that. And of course, I think probably one of the things that you learn most from those types of experiences is how amazing it is just to be able to play music with friends. And that's really what the Sam Grisman Project is. It's you have a core group of guys that you toured with last year, but you're bringing more musicians into the fold here in 2024. There's a kind of a revolving mix of great musicians that will sit in with you from time to time. In fact, the Steamboat Winter Wondergrass is going to be a little bit different than the Tahoe Winter Wondergrass, other than Chris J. English. And so I'm just wondering, is it difficult to keep the product consistent from one show to the next when you're kind of changing the ingredients that go into making it like that?
You know, that's a really good question. And I feel like it's an amazing blessing to get to bring new folks into the fold, because there's such a deep catalog of material that we're also passionate about, and really bringing different friends into the mix allows us to emphasize different corners of that material. Like we've already played about 350 different tunes in our first year as a band, and we haven't even scratched the surface of all the great music that we'd like to put across. We play a lot of original music and dog music and music that my dad and Jerry played together, as well as Garcia Hunter tunes. But bringing, say, Dominic Leslie in to play mandolin for the Tahoe Winter Wondergrass will open up a different part of the dog music catalog, and you know, bringing Roy Williams out to sing and play guitar sort of opens up different parts of the Garcia Hunter catalog, and he's bringing his own original tunes to the mix. And so it's the consistency of the project is that it's a group of friends who really do care deeply about this music and each other. And, you know, we have our own chemistry that we've developed over the years. I've been friends with Dominic Leslie since we were 10 years old. I've been friends with Rick Robertson since we were 14. He's been friends with Aaron Lipp since we were in our early 20s. Aaron and Chris English have known each other since they were teenagers, or since Aaron was a teenager. Everybody brings their own unique chemistry and experience. And, you know, we just like to have fun and say yes. And so anybody is welcome to bring whatever great music to the set that they're feeling. And you really never know what you're going to get, except for you're going to get a bunch of guys putting their heart and soul into trying to deliver a song as best as they can.
I think that kind of goes to talk a little bit about the type of music that you play too. Dog music is kind of a genreless music. It's got a little folk, a little old time, a little bluegrass. It's a lot of everything, and you're evolving that. How do you describe the music that you play?
We just play good music, you know, or at least we're trying our best. We're playing primarily on acoustic instruments, to try to keep it in the spirit of the thing that my dad and Jerry did. And that instrumentation was mandolin, guitar, percussion, and upright bass. And so that's been the core of our lineup. But it's also just a joy to add fiddle to the mix, or we've had our friend Nathaniel Smith play cello. We're going to have the great young Victor Furtado play some clawhammer banjo with us this spring. The great Logan Ledger is going to come sing and play guitar. And as I mentioned, Roy Williams and Dominic Leslie, and actually John Mylander will be with us as well at the other Winter Wondergrass. We're getting to share him with the guys in Mighty Poplar. But it's just sort of, we like to play music that makes us feel good, and we're hoping to, you know, have communion with the audience and, you know, make them feel good as well. And it's just all about, you know, building a community that's centered around passion for this particular music. And that might be, you know, music that my dad and Jerry played together, or, you know, the music that they played individually. But the one thing that I'm never asking anybody to do is to sound like my dad or to sound like Jerry Garcia. That's sort of that's an unattainable feat. And we are all just ourselves, and we're trying to sound like ourselves. And the reason that I'm hiring all of these friends to play these tunes is because I love the way that they interpret this music.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's a really good look on how to go approach the music. You know, I talk to some musicians who have famous parents who have had legendary careers in the music industry, and they kind of shy away from it. You know, they don't want to be judged for maybe riding the coattails of someone that came from before them. You, on the other hand, you really embrace the music of your dad, the music of Jerry Garcia. You talk about it a lot. Obviously, you've mentioned it a few times in the interview here, but you do it in a way that is really just trying to share the passion for music that they have, not trying to recreate it, but evolve from the music that they created themselves. What does it mean to you to be able to carry on that tradition of dog music that was pioneered by your dad?
Man, it's an undescribable, profound blessing, and just such a great privilege to be born to my particular set of parents, you know, with David Grisman being my father and Pamela Abramson being my mother. She's a brilliant writer, and she's witty and hilarious and just as creative as my dad. But I feel like I kind of won the lottery in that regard, and I would feel like a bit of a schmuck if I sort of left my privilege to the side and didn't use it in some sort of way for the benefit of myself and my community and just the musical landscape in general. I've been a bass player my entire life, and really since I was 14, when Rick Robertson, who was then Eric Robertson, convinced me, hey man, you're the only bass player amongst us, like you'll get all the gigs, like you should really just stick to this, you know, because I was always a serious musician, but I always figured I would do something else to make a living. Partly because my father is a very pragmatic cat, and he didn't sugarcoat anything for me. And so he basically told me that if I wanted to be a bass player, I would struggle, you know, I would not make very much money. And that was fine with me and is still fine with me. And that's why I've been a bass player my whole life. But I sort of went with the advice of my friends who were sort of over here saying, yeah, we're just going to fuck off and we're not going to apply to regular college, and we're just going to all go to Berkeley. So you should come to Berkeley with us and we'll just pick. And my parents were like, well, you know, you're pretty smart. You know, we'd pay for you to go to actual college, and you might want to do something that would allow you to own a house and start a family and maybe have a dog. I don't know. You know, I think my parents were pretty realistic with me when I was getting started. And I, you know, for the first 16 to 20 years of my professional career, I really wanted to de-emphasize my last name in any sort of musical context that I was invited into, because I wanted to just be a good bass player and make it on the merits of my playing, which is something that I feel like I achieved, you know, as much as I could. You know, it's hard to hide your last name from somebody when they have to write you a check. And so I can't really tell you who has hired me because of my, you know, connections and my playing, or just because of my playing, or, you know, hopefully nobody's just hired me because of my connections, because I don't really have that many, you know. My dad's not necessarily like the chosen one from the, you know, the Grateful Dead community. You know, he never really embraced fully exactly what the significance that people have placed on the catalog of material that he and Jerry created together. But me, on the other hand, I grew up seeing firsthand how much that music means to people, you know, and hearing people call out for Shady Grove at shows. And I could see how conflicted it you know, made my dad, because my dad's here to play his show and here to play dog music. And, you know, he loves Jerry and loved the music that Jerry, but, you know, there's some sort of tragic, you know, and loaded history in there for him. And a lot of it is just wrapped up in watching one of his best friends perish, you know? And I think Jerry was really happy and healthy playing acoustic music in our living room. And that's sort of how I choose to remember him. And that's sort of like how my family chooses to remember him. And for that reason, I didn't really grow up with my parents directly exposing me to the music of the Grateful Dead. I had to sort of go out and find that for myself. And that happened pretty early on, because I was thirsting for any electric music. And I would go through my dad's record shelves or CD shelves and sort of pick out anything that I thought had electric instruments on it. And one day I saw this white CD, it was a double CD, and it had a Steal Your Face, a tiny one on the spine, and cursive writing. And I pulled it out, and it was One from the Vault, which is a sort of earth-shattering live performance from the Great American Music Hall. And it kind of rocked my world. I remember there's a Help Slip Frank on there. I mean, I just never really heard anything like that was through composed, like instrumentally, outside of the context of dog music. So I drew that parallel right away, and there was something that was musically compelling to me about the music of the Grateful Dead from an early age. Yeah, I mean, I knew that Jerry was a dear friend of my dad's, like, you know, one of many friends who came and worked on music regularly with him, maybe in the first 5 or so years of my life, almost 6 years of my life, he was probably the friend who came over the most. But I had no idea that he meant so much to so many people until he passed. And that was just a hard thing to reckon with as a small child. I heard my parents cry for the first time, you know, down the hall from their bedroom, watching the news on the morning that they found out Jerry passed. And I just figured, you know, we were all devastated, but I figured that when somebody passes away, it's just on the news. You know, it's so rare. And, you know, I just, that was my first dealing with anyone's mortality. So I didn't, you know, have any concept that Jerry was, you know, the leader of the Grateful Dead or of a community of deadheads, until I started kindergarten a few months later, and all of the teachers were offering their condolences. You know, and in retrospect, it makes sense, because I was going to kindergarten in the Bay Area, and there's, you know, kindergarten teachers are pretty cool. So I bet you a lot of the kindergarten teachers in the Bay Area in 1995 were deadheads. But it just sort of started to click for me that everybody knew who Jerry was.
It's an incredible background that you have, and it is certainly something for you to embrace, but you are creating your own sound. You're evolving from that dog music, and I think the tour schedule that you have shows that people are booking you for the music, and people are coming out to see your music. I saw that you're set to release, or you're planning to release a full length album at some point this year. But like I said, you're kind of living that life of the touring musician to the fullest right now. Your schedule's pretty well packed, at least from what I could see, all the way through July. So does that mean that fans and the many that you're going to pick up along the way at these shows and Winter Wondergrass are going to have to wait till the end of the year for that new album? Or are you working on it a little bit here and there as you go?
Well, it might mean that they might need to wait a little longer for a full-length studio album. However, we have been multi-tracking pretty much every show we've played since we started the band. And we are going to release a bunch of shows on Nugs here pretty soon. So there'll be some full shows you can listen to up on Nugs. And then we have some dear friends of the band, some fans, and and our sound guy Ed, who's had ears on most of these shows, who have, you know, as much of a passion for this material as we do. And so we've tasked a few of these friends with sort of picking their favorites, just individual performances. And so there might be some sort of live compilation release in the nearer future. This is all still in the works. The great Rick Robertson, who can be seen at Steamboat this coming weekend, he's got a record that's going to come out this July that'll actually has the great Sierra Farrell featured on a track, and Sarah Duro's on another one, and Logan Ledger on another one, and Oliver Wood on another one. And it's got myself and Aaron Lipp playing on it. So that's sort of an offering from the SGP camp that's not an SGP offering.
There's going to be music out there for the fans to enjoy. And of course, this weekend in Steamboat, you mentioned it, you've got a lot of friends that you've played with. So you're going to be playing on the main stage Friday. You're going to be playing a couple sets on Saturday. We might see you. One of the things I love about Winter Wondergrass is the musicians meld together. There's always people bringing up friends on stage. So we might see you at other times throughout the weekend as well. I'm really looking forward to it. Want to thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate you setting aside some time ahead of Winter Wondergrass this weekend, and really look forward to seeing you here in Steamboat. The full schedule of events and tickets to the festival are now available at winterwondergrass.com. Thank you very much, Sam.
Awesome. We can't wait.